Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Zeno Robinson!
Ooh. Yay! I finally made it.
You made it, yes. Yeah. We were going to be here last week, but yeah. You had a signing.
I did. It was the last Saturday. Mm-hmm. I was at OG Collectibles, I think.
Oh. Yeah. Is that in Los Angeles?
Yes, technically, but it's in Downey.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Some One Piece people were over there too.
Yeah, yeah. So we did a Demon Slayer. We did a Demon Slayer signing, which is cool. Like Genya's Funko Pop had just come out, and so they wanted to do like a Genya, like a Demon Slayer specific signing. Well, I mean, it was like the wave though. It was like Griffin Burns' character, Muichiro, was out too. He just came out with the Funko, or Brick Chalmers, you know, Urokodaki, you know, and a bunch of other Demon Slayer.
Yeah, it was fun.
The OG Collectibles guys are cool too. They have all these like vintage games, and I'm like very into like games.
What's considered vintage nowadays?
They have like old school like Game Boys, you know, like Game Boy colors, like you know, and like in different colors and different makes and models, and the Super Nintendo. And I usually go because they always have like really really rare like PlayStation or GameCube games, like you know, that are like, man, this game was like $40 back when it came out, and now it's $270.
Is it? Whoa.
Yeah, because of like how the, you know,
inventory.
Exactly. And or how popular the game was back when it was released, or how good the game was. So the game was really good and really niche, and it, you know, maybe it didn't sell well then, but now it's a very coveted game because how good it was. Or if it sold incredibly well, but like people don't turn them in because of how good the game was, or whatever, what have you, it increases the value of the
game. But how many of those games still play? I mean, because I had the old Nintendo and, you know,
you'd
blow into it forever. And like, for some reason that would work. Yeah. I don't know why.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it still plays. And sometimes like they have to fix the hardware. Like if you want to buy a new like DS or a new like Game Boy SP, sometimes game can be old and along with the console, like the pixelization might be off. Might be off. So like some people have to like kind of fix the hardware in order to like make it so that it runs the game.
It's a whole underground subculture.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's so fascinating. Like you can get, and I always use this as an example just because I love this game, but like Earthbound is like 300 and like the highest I saw was like 370, 375, $375.
Dollars.
Yeah, $375 for a Super Nintendo cartridge.
Oh, Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Super Nintendo cartridge of Earthbound. And that's outside the box. And that's outside the like the bundle that it came in when it came out. Uh-oh. So Nintendo only released 1,000 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, only 1,000 of the like Earthbound Super Nintendo bundle with the strategy guide.
Do you have it?
And I have one.
Wow.
At home. I do.
Do you play it or do you just keep it in a glass curio cabinet?
I didn't know how valuable it was when I discovered it. It was funny because I'm kicking myself because back in the day, I was looking for games to sell on eBay because I just had so many as a kid. And I was like, Mom, I want to sell some of these games. And my mom was like, yeah, let's sell some of your games. The both of us being idiots, you know? The both of us. And I had discovered this Earthbound thing. And I said, oh, this is that game that Ness comes from Super Smash Brothers. I was like, I didn't know he had his own game and that it already had come out. And so I had like kind of stumbled upon this like this bundle that I had that I didn't know at the time was like incredibly rare until I started going to cons and seeing the price. I was like, why is this game so freaking expensive? And apparently it was because like they only made a limited amount and released it in North America. Pretty crazy.
Rarity.
Yeah.
We'll drive up the cost.
Yeah.
So wait, where'd you grow up?
Carson. I grew up out here. I grew up in Carson. So I've lived in Carson for most of my life, like until like a few years ago.
Is your mom still there?
My mom's still there. Okay, yeah, my mom's still there. And I lived there with my mom and my sister for like almost all my life.
You just have the one sibling?
I have two. I have my sister, I have a younger sister, and I have an older sister.
Now you kind of started acting at a young age, right?
Mm-hmm.
All about kids.
Is that like kids incorporated? KIDS.
Kinda. It was run by this woman named Felicia Scott. I don't know if she still does it, but it was run by this woman named Felicia Scott, and she was like, she had this pro. It was in LA. It was like off Wilshire, and she would just. My mom heard the advertisement on the radio.
Oh,
and she was just kind of famous for like, you know, taking all these kids and like bringing them in and training them and getting these agents to come and look at all these kids who could potentially be future stars. And yeah, and you know, a lot of those kids would get signed and end up in movies or end up in TV shows. And yeah, so like that's where I started. It was in this church in LA, and it was like a 10-week program. There was like a starting program, right? Like, we'll teach you how to do this. And then there was like an I Want an Agent program, which was like the, and I remember looking at my mom like, like, please. Yeah. And she was like, she saw the price, went, ouch. But she, you know, asked for some help from some neighbors. I don't know if my dad contributed at all, but she asked around and pulled the money together and put me through the program. And so it was like 10 weeks of like training and singing and acting and dancing with a bunch of different coaches and instructors. And
how old were you at the time?
I was probably like 13.
Okay. Yeah, probably. And you knew, you were like, I like acting.
Yeah. At that point, I had already, and it kind of happened really fast. Like the, like I discovered that I liked acting like maybe like the year before or maybe even that year. But I think kind of the year before when, you know, in middle school, we had this mandatory like assembly we had to go to, and these kids came running through the aisles, and I was in like, you had to pick an elective like as a kid, and so like my elective was like art, right? So like, you know, I'm a big nerd, so like anime, you know, so I was trying to learn. I was like, how do I make anime, you know? So that's what I was doing as a kid, like drawing Gohan really terribly, right? There's this other kid in my class, and his name was Alan, I think. He was great. I was so jealous. He could draw so well, and I was like, maybe I'm just not cut out for this.
You need to reconnect with Alan.
Yeah, I know. See what Alan he's doing. What is he doing?
Maybe he's in Japan.
Yeah, like as an animator. I saw all these kids running through the hall, and this girl came up on stage, and she was in this costume, she was in this mask, and she was talking, and I could hear her voice throughout the entire auditorium, and she was doing this monologue, and they were doing a play of The Lorax, and I was like, what is that? I want to do that. Immediately after, I walked up to the drama teacher, Mr. Lisker's name. I was like, how do I be in your thing? How do I do what they just did? And he was like, oh, it's the elective drama, blah, blah, blah. So I asked my counselor, I said, can you tell them that I want to be in the thing, in drama? And the counselor said that it had been like too late in the year, in the semester for me to switch, but the next semester I could switch over. And then I switched over. And then, you know, one thing led to another. Then the agent program, I wrote this monologue because I was like a big writer. Like as a kid, I was always writing, and like I wrote this monologue, and one of the coaches like sort of coached me through it. And then I did this monologue. It was about gang violence. I didn't know anything about gang violence. I mean, I knew a little bit about gang violence, but like it was about gang violence. It was like,
and you were like in the sixth grade.
Yeah, I was like 13, and I was writing about how my best friend got shot. Like,
that's powerful.
I wrote this monologue about how my best friend got shot in a drive-by shooting. After that, I think like a couple agents sort of like were like fielding me, like they were interested, and one of them ended up being Melissa over at CESD, who ended up being the one who
she's
we.
My son's agent.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. And it's crazy seeing like I'm in Transformers Earthspark.
Yes.
And like Zion, who plays Mo in the show, is also Melissa's.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of crazy like how generational it is now. Like I started with Melissa, and then I moved to the adults, and so someone Melissa discovered and one of Melissa's current agents are both in the same show, like as siblings. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, like that's, so like Melissa was the sort of the one who like, it was between her and this other agent who I can't remember. I don't remember her at all.
Gosh,
I don't remember her name.
You made the right choice.
Or the agency. But it's funny enough, I wanted to go with the other lady. I was like, that lady's nice, and she seemed to like me. But my mom was like, no, let's go with CESD. Like they seem to have a little bit more of a bigger, you know, a bit more like prestige.
Wow. Yep.
You know, they seem to be like one of the top agents. Mm-hmm. Like they, and she seems to see something in you. Like, let's go with her. So I went with them. And yeah, the rest is history. Like,
the rest is history.
The rest is freaking history. Yeah.
So even before you started getting into acting, you were already an anime fan, huh?
Yeah.
I think that's so amazing how that shows in your work, your passion, and your love
Oh, thank you.
For it.
Yeah.
What were some of your favorite shows growing up?
I was, you know, Dragon Ball
Dragon
Z,
Ball.
you know, Pokemon. I was a big Sailor Moon fan as a kid. Sonic, like Sonic Toei. I didn't know anime was anime until, like, we didn't have cable for a while. So when we got cable because I had booked Ben 10. That was the reason why we got cable, because we wanted to watch it when it came out on TV on Cartoon Network. But then with getting Cartoon Network
And
came
then you ended up
Toonami.
spending your entire paycheck from the show
Right,
watching
getting to get
cable.
cable, yeah, exactly.
God.
From there, when we got Cartoon Network, then came Toonami, and then that introduced me like to like Naruto and like that block of like anime and like Adult Swim. So then that's when I started getting introduced to like Fullmetal Alchemist and you know Cowboy Bebop and you know Dead Man Wonderland, like a lot of the shows that were like foundational when I was like coming up and like watching shows and like as an actor being like, wow, I want to make someone feel whatever this show is making me feel, you know? Yeah, it was great,
All the
great time.
feels.
The feels, yeah,
All the
all the
feels.
feels.
So then you started doing, you had booked Ben 10, you're making your way through high school. How did you get your first anime gig? What was your first anime gig?
My first anime gig was, I was incidentals in All Noah Zero, season two.
Was that something you sought out or something
Kind
that was
of.
like presented to you from your agency?
It was mostly something that I had sought out. Like, CESD wasn't really dealing with anime, like, at the time. And I had wanted to get into it, and everybody sort of kind of knew I liked it. But, like, people around me were like, oh, I don't know, like, how your agents will feel about it. And I was kind of like, I didn't really kind of care, like, at the time. I just knew that it
I
was,
am who I am.
yeah, and it's, like, something that I wanted to do. And especially, it was taking place during a time where I was not working. Like, you know, Ben 10, in between Ben 10 and the next thing I booked had been like 7 years. Like between that and like Big City Greens, there was just like this big, big period of like me not working and just like taking classes and going to school and like living my life.
College or high school?
Both. I was, you know, I did high school and then I was in college still kind of trying to find my way and find my
Where'd you
footing.
go to college, by the way?
I went to Santa Monica College.
Okay, so still in LA.
Yeah,
You're
still in
still in
LA.
LA. You're
Still in
committed to
LA.
the acting. What'd you
Yeah.
study when you're
I did study acting when I was in college. That was the main reason why I went. I was like, if I'm gonna go, like I'm gonna go and like study theater and, you know, maybe I'll try to transfer to like UCLA or something. But like I had started feeling like I was missing out on acting opportunities because I was still in school. I was like, like I can't go on XYZ audition because I have class. You know, I can't go on this audition because I have class. And like that was kind of, you know, kind of getting irritating for me. Sometimes I would miss it, right? I would have to miss it because, like, for me, like, that's more important. But yeah, so Anime Expo had, you know, Bang Zoom did the open auditions at Anime Expo, like 20, I want to say like 14 or 15, one of those years. But everyone I knew when it was announced kept tagging me, like, because they knew I was an actor, like all my friends, like all my high school
Yeah, they're like,
friends.
he
And I
was on
thought,
Ben 10.
yeah, there was like, oh, they go, oh, look, I know
On
you
Big
like
City
anime
Greens.
and you're an actor. They're doing open auditions over there at Anime Expo.
And it's
So,
only how many hours do you have to stay there?
right. And I was like, okay. So it was the only reason why I went. I didn't even know what Anime Expo was at that time. I just knew that it was a place where I could go and audition for anime, because that's what it says. Like, oh, you want to be an anime? You could come and audition. So I went, and it was the first thing I did. I looked up when it was, where it was, and I was like the third person in line
Well, what time
before,
did you get there?
probably like 5 in the morning, four,
5 in the morning,
five
set the scene for us.
in
So,
the morning.
downtown LA, was
So,
it still in downtown LA at that
yeah, it
point?
was still in downtown LA, still the
Okay.
convention center. Someone I was dating at the time was going with me.
Just the two of you guys?
Just the two of us. And I got there. I don't know, like it was still dark out. Like that's how early we were. And I, you know, we found parking somewhere nearby, somewhere close, and we were just waiting for the hall to open. And I said, oh, it's in this place. Once it opens, we're going straight
So,
there.
wait, what time was this at?
This had to have been at least 5 in the morning, because it was still dark. And like we like had and in fact, like we had got up and went straight there. You know, like we got up at like maybe 4 in the morning to get ready to go. And so we went straight there, and I said, you know, I think we just waited for the hall to open, because we had got our badges the day before. You get your badge the day before, and we just waited for the hall to open. And then the only reason why I wasn't like the first person there is because I got lost, because I'd never been there before, right? I didn't know where it took place or what booth it was at. And I think at that year they were doing Magi. They were doing open auditions for Magi, and I really wanted to play this character named Sphinctus. Like I didn't really know how it worked at that time, but you know, I got there and I was like one of the first people up, and then I didn't hear back. after that. And I had assumed that I didn't get a call back because I think they had posted like the people who got call back. So I was like, okay, I didn't make
they
it.
They posted there at
yeah.
the event.
They don't post at the event. They post like a little bit after. Okay. So I was like waiting around, mm-hmm. like, you know, and I think like, I don't know if you get like a rejection thing or blah, blah, blah. But I knew that I didn't go farther than that. And then they had another kind of open audition type thing called Perfect Idol that was like immediately after AX, where you could just audition for the kind of same deal. Mm-hmm. Like you can, you know, you audition with like a scene from an anime on like on, and record yourself like performing. And then like, you know, three judges would judge you. It was like Mommy, it was like Patrick Seitz and like Keith Silverstein. And they were the judges, right? Mm-hmm. And they would like all like listen and go over and then like, and they would get say yay or nay, mm-hmm. right? And so I did Perfect Idol and I also didn't make it past the first, I know, I didn't make it. They, yeah, Mommy was the only one who said,
what a story about
yay.
Perseverance.
I know. And so I didn't make it through the first round of the first auditions, and I didn't make it through Perfect Idol. And then the next year, I went back to do the open auditions again.
At Anime Expo.
And this time, I got a call back. But it took a while. I thought, again, that I didn't make it through. But then I got a call back, and that was when she brought me in to do these incidentals for All Know Zero. And my first, like, sort of named... Well, my first, like, elevated incidental yeah. was I played this bully in Charlotte, right, who had, like, lines, like, mm-hmm, actual, mm-hmm. like, dialogue to ADR. And then my first sort of role, like, was, I think, Super Alloy Blackluster in One Punch Man.
What year was that?
This had to have been, like, 2016 still.
2016. So let's yeah. just take a moment and acknowledge how much has changed in the past 6 to 7 years.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Like... crazy.
From open auditions. Yeah. I mean, Christina to, B, so many people got their start
yeah,
at those
from,
banks.
Like, Eric Kimura, and I don't know if Sean Chiplock got a start that way, too, but, like, Zach Aguilar, like, so many other people got their start that way. And, like, I failed twice. Like, I didn't make it through twice. And I was like, mm-hmm. no, I want to do it. I can do this, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
So was there a particular role that you felt changed the game for you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, in the two roles in particular. Mm-hmm. So when I booked Remy in Big City Greens, that was like, oh, like it was my first recurring animation role. Well, technically not the first. I booked Randy Robertson in Disney XD's Spider-Man. And, you know, me and Melissa, and I remember Melissa called me when we got the email, because I auditioned for the first round. I auditioned for Miles the first time. And then they requested me for this other character, because I think Chris Zimmerman had just really wanted to use me. Like, she saw something in me, who was the casting director for that. And, you know, I remember when we got the call after I sent the audition in, and you know, me and her were like, oh my God, I can't believe this is... Because they had wanted all these holds. They had wanted all these, like, they wanted all these days, like, booked out, right? Like, they wanted all these holds. Like, we want to hold this day, like, every week. For the next like 6 months or something. And we were like, oh my gosh. And it was like, she was like, you've worked so hard, Zita. I was like, it's been so long. I did. Cause like, I had gone through this whole thing with them and like, you know, like it had been years. I've been with them for years and they had like, you know, there was a period of time where like they dropped me. Mm-hmm. And then I took an acting class and Melissa showed up and was like, I wanna like, you know, bring you back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then boom, like the Spider-Man thing. And she was like, I can't, like, and me and her were like emotional, like in tears, like, oh my gosh. And she was like, you worked so hard and blah, blah, blah. You know, and we were just like really, really excited. And it felt like all these years of perseverance and, you know, that's 7 years. That has to be at least 4,000 auditions, if that, right? Like it has to be at the, you know.
That makes me feel great to hear that though, in a way, not to hear that you had to struggle, but that like it normalizes the fact that this career, no matter what stage you are in the game, has downturns, has struggles, has challenging times.
100%.
7 years.
Seven. And like that's, and like I, you know, I went through high school. I went through college. Is, you know, it's seven, and 7 years of like nowhere. Like it's different if it's like, oh, I did one thing here and I did one thing there and I did one thing there. You know, like I might have shot a commercial, like a on-camera commercial, like once or twice, like maybe once a year. But it was 7 years of like nothing. I'm like, callbacks, like I would do callback. I would get closed.
That's good,
right? You know, but nothing. You know, no getting a job, And
There's probably like one other dude that was like your type.
Yeah, that, you know,
it's like this one other guy.
Yeah, I'd say it's like one other guy, or like Kari Payton, right? And it's like one other guy, or like Phil Lamar, right? It's like, okay, you could have picked me, but I understand why you picked the professional, right? Or the guy who you know can get the job done. So it would be like me, or like one kid who like looked like me, or who was a little bit younger than me, or was a little bit older than me, you know? Or, and so it was just, that's how it was for a really long time.
But you hung in there.
But I hung in there. And then we did, and then we booked Spider-Man. And then I was only in two episodes of Spider-Man. And
but they had you hold your entire
They had
life.
Me hold all these holds. And so me and Melissa were kind of a little disappointed that we were really excited about it. And then she was like, oh, but like, you know, it's more, you know, like this is more holds than bookings. Like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. So, but then by then I had already moved to the adult department, which is like a whole new like kind of feel
a whole
for me.
New world.
A whole new world, right? I was like, I don't know who any of you are. You know,
and
like,
you're big.
Yeah, wait, give me back, take me back to Melissa, please.
You the know? One little room.
Yeah.
Safe haven. You can shut the door.
Yeah. And so then it was still kind of like more of the, okay, well, keep it on the grind, keep it on the auditions, you know, let's like just, I'm in Spider-Man, but not as much as we would like. So it was still cool. It was like still very cool. Like I remember the first day, the first session was, I was super excited and it was like, man, and like I was in, you know, that was when group records still thing. So like I was in there with like, you know, Robbie Damon and like Ben Diskin and like, you know, Jason Spezak and like all these people who were like just professionals and like drew me into the world immediately. And I was like, wow, they're so, everybody's so good. But then Big City Greens happened and it was like a recurring, you know, and I knew it was like a heavy featured recurring and I had to audition like 5 times. Like I auditioned, and this is a role I had auditioned for years prior too. So when it came back around, I was like, I auditioned for this. Hmm. And then I had to do like, so I did that and I did a callback and then I had to do 2 elevated callbacks, right? Where I record the whole episode and then they record the episode and they take it to the producers and the producers have to say, okay, this is the guy. But they had to sort of convince the producers that, like, I was the guy for the role.
And maybe they're even chemistry testing you with the other
actors. Yeah, with the
actors,
other actors who are already established, who've already been working on the show for like a year at that point now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I had to do, like, 2 more, like, test ADR callbacks, right? So then I had to do, like, ADR of the show on, like, 2 episodes. And, like, they had to send those over and, like, get the approval and blah. So
wow.
Like, it was like really stressful because I was like, please, dear God, please, like, please let me book this. Like, oh my God, please.
And it really is amazing. It's a small miracle to book anything ever.
Right.
You know, it makes you realize.
Yeah. Like, it's always a small miracle to book anything ever. That's such a great way to like look at that because it's so true. But then, you know, I got the call from my agent, Pat, who was still at CESD at the time. And yeah. And then she like, I was watching Get Out like by myself at the Lamely in NoHo. And I was like watching Get Out. It was like the 5th time I'd watched the movie. I was like, wow, I love this movie. The movie is so good. And I got a call from my agent and I like, and that, and she like told me right there, like, she's like, oh yeah, you booked it. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, your heart must, you still have call coming. You're like,
yeah. I was like, I gotta go. You know, I've seen this movie.
It was the first showing, maybe not.
But. Right, yeah. And yeah, and so then that was what kind of, I think, changed my life. And
did it change how you felt about yourself? Did it kind of validate your acting choices? Or do you think?
I think it validated the perseverance that it took. Mm-hmm. It let me know that it was something that I could do on a professional level. Yeah. You know, you'll get a call back and you'll be like, wow, I can do this. I can compete, right? But then you won't get it. And you're like, well, okay, well, what was it, right? As an actor, you go, well, what was it? What was it that the other guy had that I didn't have? Or what was it that was appealing for them that I didn't have? And I think like booking, because that year was the year where everything was happening, right? It was like Remy, and then it was like I booked Craig of the Creek, and then it was like I booked Young Justice, all in that
wow.
year. And it was like, it just felt like divinely, like, oh, God was like, hey, like, just wait.
And you kind of wonder, like, what's on the other side of that?
Yeah. And it felt like God was waiting for something to click, and it did at that moment, or it did in that year, where I was just like, oh, okay. Oh, I can do this. Oh, I can compete with these people. Mm-hmm. Oh, I am like just as good, or I do have what it takes. Like, mm-hmm. there's just a lot of like in that period of not working where you're just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just something like I'm missing, or maybe there's some disconnect between my brain and my body or my emotions. Maybe there's just something that I just don't have. And like, like that was just like a, oh no, like you do, you got it. Like you just had to like go through this, and you had to like learn this, and you had to learn this aspect of your instrument and this aspect of your art, and you had to like take this perspective. You know, I used to go to CSD and I would do an audition, I walk and I hate it. I'm like, oh my God, freaking. You know, like, have you seen that Tarantino movie with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Mm-mm. There's a scene in that where Leonardo DiCaprio, because he plays an actor, yeah. He like looks in the mirror and he's like, I can't believe you ruined that scene in front of all those freaking people. I will freaking kill you. You know, he's like, I'm just like, oh my God. I was like, this is such what an actor like would do, right? Like, I can't believe you suck, you stupid, you know? And like, that's how I would talk to myself, you know? Oh. That's how I would talk to myself.
Yeah.
And like,
not anymore.
Because, you know, of a lot of the people in my life, I had a lot of community, and I had a lot of great teachers. Like Charlie Adler was an excellent teacher, not just because he's a good teacher, but because just of the things that he says, they stick with me. You know, the things that he says stay with you.
Any examples?
Yeah, like back during this period, you know, I took his class. I was taking he was just like, you know, because the first thing he asks everyone is like, oh, what's like going on? Like, what do you need? Right. And the first thing I told him, man, like, I feel like I keep auditioning and I keep getting close and I don't get it. And it's crushing. Mm. It's like soul crushing. Mm. And like, I don't know, like what to do. Like, and I go in and I read, like, I got to get it. I got to book the job. I got to get it. I can't get dropped again. Like all this other stuff. Mm. And he's like, well, only one person is going to get the job. You know, only one person, whatever. And you, like, doing your auditions with the desperation of needing to book the job, they'll hear that. Mm-hmm. Any fear you bring into the booth will come out in your read. And my mind went, you know, I was like, wow, okay. You know, I never thought of it that way. You know, I just thought if I tried hard enough, I tried as hard as I can, they'd see that. And like, he's like, yeah, but then you're not living in the reality of the character. You're not living in the reality of the moment. Just stuff like that. Just like, that always like just kind of stuck with me. You know, he's just like, you know, only one person's going to get it, you know, regardless of what happens. Like, only one person's going to get it. And like, you know, if you come into your read with that sort of desperation, that's what you're going to get. And like, you know, he like starts off like the last class I took, which was like during the pandemic, he started off the class with asking everyone, what is the most damaging thing someone has ever said to you about your career? Because he has the intention of undoing that damage, you know. And mine was, you know, like, oh, like I remember, you know, and I think it was like a harmless thing, you know, but I remember I was talking to like one of my parents about like, you know, I'm talking to my dad about like my roles, and you know, it was just the first thing that came to mind. I didn't even think it was that bad. I told him, I was like, oh, it's not that bad. I was just like, yeah, he just asked like, oh, well, you know, I see you're always auditioning, but why aren't you getting the job? And I was like, that doesn't seem like that's that bad, right? A lot of people were told these horrible things.
Sure.
Yeah. And Charlie, I was like, that's a bomb. What are you talking about? He was like, that's incredibly damaging to hear. You're not good enough is what you're receiving, you know? And I was like, maybe that is what I heard, you know? And I was like, ow, you know, like, dang, like that was something that I, you know, he was like that. He was like, I know you. And I had already been working with him for like years. He was like, you know, I know your story. I know where you came. I know that was probably really hurtful for you to hear from someone who like you wanted to support you, you know. So yeah, like he completely changed how I like looked at like my looked at the work and looked at the art. Just like all these stories he would tell, he would always break into a story with like about like, you know, the teachers he learned from and like all the experiences he had, and like he would always just really get to the heart of the not just the actor but their emotional. So I remember I brought friends to just I was like who were interested. I was like, oh, you gotta take his class. And like one of them like was going through something personal. It was like, I mean, he could just tell because he's an actor, he's an empath, you know. He was just like, hey, like you okay? She's like, yeah. He's like, hey, just know that like it passes, you know, like it won't be forever, you know.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
And
then he tells you to pull up your pantyhose.
Yeah, exactly. In the same breath, you know. So he's great, and he completely changed how I looked at the work and how I looked at acting, like in general, because I looked at it as this thing that was just like, I don't know, like daunting, right? Like, oh, I gotta do this audition, I gotta book it, I gotta, because I can't, because I gotta do this, and like, I gotta pay this bill, and I gotta blah, 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 blah. And he started trying to, he was the beginning of me reframing that into like it being something fun. And like, when I started walking out of like auditions, like, I like that. There's nothing more I can ask of myself from what I did then. And so, you know, there was that. And then the next thing that really just changed like my career was booking Hawks and My Hero Academia. Mm-hmm. Then after that.
Had you read My Hero Academia before you auditioned?
I hadn't read it before I auditioned. I watched, I think, the first season before I auditioned.
You watched the sub?
No, I watched it in dub. I watched it in dub.
Okay.
The first time. And it's funny because I was always, you know, looking up manga that was out and seeing who licensed it. And based off of who licensed it, trying to determine if it would go to L.A. or if it would go to Texas. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, My Hero was one of those where I was like, this looks really cool. Yeah. I want to audition for this. And then I would look it up, and it had been licensed by Funimation. And I was like, okay, so it's in Texas, and I'll never get to work on this. Uh-huh. Right? It's in Texas. I'll never get to be in the show. And, like, at that, by the time I looked it up, it already was, like, deep into its dubbing season, right? Uh-huh. And I was like, no, I'll never get to be in My Hero. And then, like, what, a couple years later, I'm the Hawks in the fourth season.
Was that because of the pandemic? Well, Kellen was working on the show. Mm-hmm. He came on in early season one, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny about Kellen is his dad reached out to me when Kellen was 17, and he's like, aww. My son wants to break into voice acting. What do you think? And, you know, you get emails like that every single week. It's sometimes hard to respond to everyone, but it was a friend of a friend, and I listened to his demo, and I was like, oh my God, he's so good.
I took classes with Kellen.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was in, I think that was where I first heard him, was I think a Charlie Adler class, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this kid's good. You know, I was like, oh, he's
the range,
so good.
Yeah.
What? They make kids this talented? You know, they make people this talented? It's like, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, so they had made the choice, I guess, to cast some Los Angeles actors? Or
yeah, I think they were, they would come to L.A., you know, on occasion. Sometimes they were, like, running through all the talent they had in Texas. Or on occasion, they would just, like, have a character and they would just open it up to L.A. talent. And I think that was what had happened in season four. She was, like, opening it up to L.A. talent. And, like, my agent Sam was working on, like, this is when CSD was like, okay, we might want to, like, try the anime thing. And so my agent Sam, who was a junior agent at the time, was, like, working on making that connection. And I also had a friend, Brittany Lauda, over in Texas, who I worked with a couple times. She had did this indie game, and I was working with her on this indie game. She had put my name in over at Funimation as well. Mm-hmm. So I had got this, you know, so I got the audition for the Shia Saikai on that show, which is like, you know, there were these like this gang of villains in the fourth season. And like the guy I played had just a couple of cues.
Yeah.
But, you know, working with Colleen, and Colleen was like, oh, I liked working with you. Like, I want to work with you more, because the guy just didn't have much to do. She's like, well, I've got this character coming up, and, you know, I'm opening this up to LA actors, and, you know, if you want to audition, I'd love to have you audition. And I said, I'd love to audition. And it was this, I opened the audition, it was this guy Hawks, and so I'm like, looking him up, and, you know, I'm like, oh, this character seems like a big deal. Like, and at that point, I hadn't really played a character with, like, an anime, at least, like, with a significant role, you know, like, or a significant, like, role to play in the story. You know, there's,
let alone My Hero.
One of the biggest anime.
You start sweating.
Yeah. Because I was in it, and I was satisfied, right? I was like, you know, I was in My Hero. I did my thing. I never thought I'd be in it. And now I was in it as a villain. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then, so when Hawks came around, I was like, I'm not going to book this. You know, they opened it up to LA people. Out of all the LA people, I'm competing against Matt Mercer and, like, Johnny Young Bosch and, like, XYZ. Like, there's no way I'm going to book this guy. Like, me, one, you know, like, Zeno Robinson, who, like, people in L.A. don't even hire for anime. You know, like, how, you know, it's just like, it was very daunting. And so, like, I spent a very long time on that audition. I spent, like, maybe 3 hours, maybe four auditioning.
Wow.
This isn't good enough. It's not good enough. I've got to do it again. Uh-huh. I've got to do it again. And that gets exhausting. And you eventually get to a point where you're like, okay, just give it three takes. And if they don't like these three takes, you're just not the guy. Like, it wasn't for you, you know? And so, yeah, I, like, deleted everything I had done because I didn't want to edit 4 hours of auditioning. And then...
The worst.
Right. And then I just gave her three takes and I sent it in. And I got an email, like, upon the new year. And the title was Happy New Year, Hawks. And I said... Yeah,
that feeling.
Yeah, it was like, no freaking way. And that had come, like, compiled with the Pokemon, too. Like, I had booked Go and Pokemon, like,
yeah,
like the same day.
The same day?
Like the same day.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a good day.
It was a good
How'd
day.
How'd you celebrate?
It was during the was it during the pandemic? No, it wasn't. It was like right. It was before the pandemic. I was at home. I flipped out. I don't know what
Danced
I did.
Danced around the house.
Yeah, maybe I got some ice cream.
It's
maybe.
Like when I found out I booked One Piece, I was just like, half a day,
Yeah. Maybe I ordered a pizza. Maybe I was like, you know, I deserve a pizza or some
We're
wings
going
or something.
Big today.
Yeah.
So, what's your process like when you get audition sides? How do you approach an audition?
I like read it over and. Like I start off by like practicing the dialogue out loud, try to get a feel for the character, try to get for like how they speak, how they talk, mm-hmm. their attitude. Then you know, after I kind of say it a couple times, I refer back to the little breakdown, the character breakdown, and just see if I've got their personality. If there's a picture, is the most helpful thing. If there's like a character image, so like I can like imagine what they sound like with my voice, right? Imagine mm-hmm. what this character sounds like from me, coming from me. And then I just like work the moments and I work the beats and I go, okay, like this is emotional. This is this. I've got to bring it here. And then, you know, yeah. And usually like I'll just, my best tool is like I just go in and I just do it until it feels good. Mm-hmm. So I like, I go in and I go in
Into
my
your booth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll record a first take. A first pass, just to do a first pass. Usually I throw away the first pass. I learned that from Tony Oliver. Like, always kind of just, you just do a first pass, and I usually just throw that away. But then I, like, refine the moments. Like, oh, who's he speaking to? I think I want to do it a little more, like, I want to make them a little more brokenhearted in this moment, or I want to make them a little more scared or a little more happier. Or what if I said it like this? You know, this is a funny beat, and there's, like, a few ways I can attack this funny moment. You know, I can, like, emphasize this word, or I can, like, draw out this one, you know, and so I just do it by trying to live in it as much as possible.
And what about physicalization? Do you physicalize certain actions? Do you find you stay connected?
Always. I try to be as physical as possible, especially like the more bigger, like more animated stuff, the more zany stuff. Usually like the video game stuff, they tend to want to be more cinematic, and usually there's not like not a lot going on unless it's like a Naughty Dog project and they want you to like do 5 seconds of sprinting and then you punch a guy in the face and then you know like
you die while jumping off a cliff on fire.
Right. But I try to like physicalize as much as possible because I feel like it just adds to the weight of the moment. But a lot of and some stuff is like just breath stuff, like breath work is like really important, I think, and in the work, you know, the emotional stuff. It's, you know, it's always
and proximity too. Mm-hmm. I think is like something that first-time voice actors or you know even all, some of us, you know, proximity to the mic is so important depending upon the genre.
Yeah,
the promo trailer, you kind of have a tendency to move in and use.
Yeah.
Base effect.
Yeah, I tend to like move in like on like very intimate mm-hmm. scenes, like when like a character is like doubting themselves or really down on themselves, and you know I try to move in because usually that stuff means they're just right there and they're talking to each other and like being like, oh, I messed up today, you know, and I ruined everything and blah blah blah, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I try to get as physical as possible. The more in my body and the more lived it is, I think the more like honest it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. We were on a couple projects together. Mm-hmm. We just did the first Slam Dunk.
Kiminobu Kogure.
Kogure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
That was cool.
You didn't make the premiere, sadly.
Yeah, and I don't know what I was doing that night, but I know I think I was at a con, like in another state.
It was so, really fun.
Yeah.
And then you were also in Neon White.
Yeah. You were one of the agents.
I was Neon Red.
Neon Red. Yeah, you're Neon Red. Yeah.
Love interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we hear your voice?
Yeah, Raz is a cute little. He's a cat
Kitty
angel.
Cat.
Yeah, with a little beanie. And so I kind of gave him this like cool, you know, I thought the scratch in his voice, like the rasp, is what would tie it together because he's like also a bartender. He's kind of cool. So I kind of gave him a little bit of a scratch kind of type deal. And he's kind of cool. He's got the beanie and the low eyes, you know. He's just like, hey man, you know, just whenever you want to come by and get some good water and some good times with good friends. I'm all ears, you know, so, yeah, you know, that was really, really cool.
So now you've just like, you piled on the number of roles, the number of really iconic roles. And I see you, I mean, I run into you at the airport, you're back from this con, that con, mm-hmm. you are on the move
Thank you.
Your fan base is, you know, very passionate. Mm-hmm. And how are you managing your time these days?
I'm not, usually like my days are all... I spend, you know, I'm working during the day, and then at night I'm like relaxing kind of, or I'm trying to, or I might be like auditioning, or usually I'm if I'm auditioning like at night, that means like I come home and then I have to audition, and that's like another 2 hours of like work, maybe three, you know, because I just, I take so long on auditions, and because I'm trying to like perfect them, and then I try to relax and some time in between that. But yeah, not really effectively managing
a lot of
my
travel
time.
I mean, I know sometimes that can be depleting and exhausting, being in one city one weekend and another city the next weekend.
Yeah. And sometimes having to like come back from a con and immediately go to work.
Yeah.
Like I'll come back and I'll be like, well, I got a session in like 3 hours. I got to go, you know. But sometimes it can be rewarding. It's like what I ask for. Mm-hmm. But now it's like the challenge of like, how do I manage a healthy work-life balance? Like, how do I establish that with myself?
Yeah. And you don't currently have a family.
I mean, no, no partner, spouse, or anything like that. Yeah, no.
So that's good to raise a little more time just for Zeno.
Just for me, the me time.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of times I'm trying to pursue, like, personal creative things. Like, that's what I'm trying to move into right now. Just like, like I'm trying to like make this, you know, I'm developing a little show with my friends, and I'm developing a manga project.
Yes, let's talk about that manga project.
Yeah,
that
you want to talk
really
about my manga?
Please.
Oh my gosh! So right now, I'm working on, you know, Memento Mori.
Memento Mori.
So right now, I'm working on a one shot because I'm a creative, and like I'm always having these ideas that always start off small and then spin off into something bigger than what they should be. So I'm trying to like continue to focus on condensing and making it something small and palatable, something that I think can be completed.
Yeah.
So I can finish something and have something to show. But so right now it's called Memento Mori. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole story of Memento Mori, right? Memento Mori has its own story. I'm currently working on like a prequel one shot of that story.
Okay.
Just for something really small, really palatable, really something that me and the artist that I'm working with can actually accomplish and achieve and put out.
Are you writer-producer on this project?
Yes. So I'm...
Wow.
Yeah. As much as I can, right? As much as, like, one person can with, like, another guy who's got his own life and things he needs to do and, like, you know. But it's called Exordium. So it's, like, Memento Mori Exordium. And Exordium's the prequel story. And it's, like, this... It takes place on the backdrop of the afterlife. It's purgatory. Kind of like Neon White a little bit, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. It's purgatory. And in purgatory... The like all us like humans like our sins accumulate there like as because of it's like this convoluted story, right? But our sins accumulate in purgatory where angels are stationed to clean them up, and it's like an endless sort of job. And that's because due to the influence of this one bad guy who created original sin within humanity. So when we die and we go to purgatory, if we die and we die before our time, right? There's this concept of like dying before your time, in like Christian churches and stuff like that. Like I always heard about it growing up. And so if you like die and you're like aren't judged to go to heaven or hell, you go to purgatory. If you're stationed in purgatory as like this wandering lost soul, you can like kind of sort of be taken over by your like earthly sinful impulses and become a sin. And so it's the angel's job to purify you and stop you from wreaking havoc and overrunning the afterlife, which has real world consequences. So Exordium is essentially the story of how reincarnation began, which begins in purgatory. And,
cool.
Yeah. So it's the main characters are all these angels who all are kind of stationed there. And then a human, one of the lost souls, he develops a will. And he regains his sense of self. And the angels are like, we have no idea what to do with this human being, you know, with this mortal who has, you know, they've never seen anything like it before. And he ends up wrapped up in this conflict between the angels and a betrayer who wants to find a way back to heaven. And so that's the story of Exordium. And it all leads up to the creation of reincarnation, which will then lead to the main story of...
So is the idea to publish this?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
How far off are you guys?
Very.
is it time to kickstart or...?
Not yet. I think right now we're finalizing character designs. Yeah. We've got like almost all the main characters all finally designed, right? Yeah. As of like maybe a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
We've been working on this for like a couple years now. And so all the character designs are finalized. And we're finishing up the design phase. I've already written... about 30, so I'm testing the pacing and stuff with my artist I wrote like 30 pages, and I said, okay, I've got 30 pages written, you know, let's see your pacing with this, and it'll determine our pace, and you know, it'll determine like how I can project when things will come out and things like that, or how fast you work, and it can determine how fast things come out, XYZ, and how we want to release things. So once we're completely finished with the design phase, I'm going over the script right now, just cleaning it up. You know, I'm gonna give him like a month to do as much as he can.
And then you'll print it. It'll be a physical.
I won't print it yet. I want to print everything when it's finished.
Okay.
I think the 30 pages is just like a first sort of chap, not chap, like a first like issue sort of type deal. And that I'll probably just put out online.
Digitally.
Digitally,
Got it. Got
yeah,
it.
for people to read, you know, maybe for the
Yeah.
freezies. But if I
Become
make,
fans, get into the storyline, get into the characters.
and then maybe I can kickstart
Do
something,
you
right?
have a character you want to play when you make it into a TV show?
Not really, actually, not with this one. I have like other ideas, and I was like, oh, maybe I could play this guy,
Yeah.
but in this one specifically, I don't have a character like for me that I would play. Maybe I'll like audition or something, audition myself if it ever becomes a thing.
It's
But
also great to give other
yeah.
people the
But
opportunity.
yeah, I have so I'm like, oh, I want this actor to play this character. I don't want this actor to play this guy. So that's fun too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so.
So before we go, I'm just curious because you said growing up you're a huge Dragon Ball Z fan. What was it like then
Being
getting
in
cast on
Dragon,
a Dragon Ball property?
absolutely insane. Like, I mean, like, never, like, you know, there's some things where you go, I don't know if you felt this way on One Piece, but you know, there's just some things you go, I'll never be in that. And that's okay, right? I was a fan and I love being a fan and it's cool. I don't mind not being in that thing, right? There's some things where you don't even think about it. You don't even think about wanting to be in it because it's so much established already. Like it's established itself already where you're like, yeah, there's no room for me there, you know? And I love it the way it is. And so like that was Dragon Ball for me. It hadn't even occurred to me that I could potentially be in it and in that capacity, like in playing someone who's like integral to the lore and the canon of Dragon Ball, you know, like who, yeah, I that had never occurred to me. So like, you know, I worked a lot and I think at some point you end up thinking that you will stop geeking out about things, but you kind of never do. And so even when I booked it, I mean, even the way that I booked it was crazy. I was in New York. I was in New York just like on vacation, you know, like I was in New York visiting, you know, someone and I was like staying at this Airbnb and I get a call. I can
Oh
listen
no.
to just listen to this how listen to this sentence, the words of this sentence. I get a call from Chris Sabat. You know, like
Whoa.
that's a crazy sentence that I never thought I would utter in my entire life. I get a call from Chris Sabat and he's like, "Hey, I've got this thing that I'm working on because a lot of NDAs, I can't really tell you what it is. I can't really give you much of any details, but you know, I think you would be great for the role. I think you would be a great option for the role." And he's kind of like this sort of fun character that I think you'd absolutely nail, you'd absolutely be perfect for. But the caveat is, one, I can't really tell you anything at all about what it is and what I'm doing. And two, I need you to audition today.
And you're in
I'm
New York
in
at
New
an
York. Yeah.
Airbnb.
But luckily I had brought like my little
Gear,
mic and stuff, you
sure.
know, just in case. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, whatever you say. Like I 100% I'm on it now. And I had a feeling it was Dragon. It was because I knew the movie was coming out, it was coming up, and I know he's like heavily involved in that. So I was like, I had a feeling it was Dragon Ball. And you know, so I sent in an audition and he like texted me and he says, oh yeah, this is great. Like I think, you know, we'll see. Like I have a couple other guys I have auditioning, but like it's like there it's very quick, very limited. I have a limited pool, you know. So and he was like, just tell me who you also think like you would work well with. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I would love to work with like these actors, you know, like, you know, and I was like, yeah, Alex is like my bro. So yeah, I think we would work really well together. And boom, like it ha and I when I got back to LA and I kind of forgot about it. And then I get a text from, you know, Justin Cook, who's over at Crunchyroll, and he was like, hey man, if we wanted to blah blah blah, like what's the if we wanted to offer you something, like what's the proper channels to do that? And I was like, oh, like this is the proper channel, blah 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 blah. And I was like, I think this is Dragon Ball. You know, I was just like, it's like there's like a lot of just like,
Your spidey senses
yeah,
were.
just like I'm putting two and two together. And then my agent message, he like he contacts me. He's like, hey, I got this offer for Dragon Ball. I'm like, oh my God, what? And it was, I mean, I'm even recording it, just like having like Sabat in the room, you know, and like recording scenes alongside Piccolo, a
How many
character.
sessions did you guys?
Two. It was two sessions because movies are fast. Like anime movies are fast, and like, you know, Chris Sabat's directing me, and you know, he's like, yeah, I'm an actor's director. You know, I'm willing to stay here until we get it perfect. And I love that. I love like when directors are like, we got to get it right. You know, so we really, really just dug in and just like did the work. And I mean, it was, and on top of that, it was like me freaking out. Like I'm watching this movie, like that I'm looking forward to watching, and it's about Gohan, right? So he's like showing me, he's like, oh, this is what happens at the end. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, Gohan gets this new form. And, oh, and so I'm like freaking out as a fan, you know, and he's like, man, it's so cool that you're a fan. You know, usually we've done this stuff for so long. We're just like, all right, it's like another blah, blah, blah. And like, we bring in people who like kind of are whatever about it, but like, it's so cool that you're like kind of still a fan and you still freak out about it. It's like really gratifying because, you know, they're fans too, you know, like they're fans too. And they, I think it excites like, especially someone like Chris who like sort of established the show. It's like exciting for him when other people are exciting and still like, and still passionate about the show, or right? Just as passionate as he is about the show, you know, and about Dragon Ball. And like, you know, and I've taught is like recording scenes alongside him with him directing me. And like, it's Piccolo. Like, it's a character who I've like grown up listening to, like in my ear that I'm actually interacting with. It's like absolutely crazy. It was such an honor. Like, it was, yeah, it's so insane. And I got to do the big Dragon Ball yell at the end. And, you know, Chris is trying to be very protective of my voice because he knows how these yells go, you know, and he's like, hey, like, you know, like we don't have to do too many and just, you know, and, you know, I do one, you know, one take of the big, big scream. And he's like, you good? Like, I'm clenching over here. And I'm like, can I do one more? And he's like, what? Like, are you sure? Like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I could do a better one. And he's like, oh, okay, but just, you know, you don't have to. And I was like, no, I want to. He's like, all right. So I do, you know, this other, you know, the biggest yell I can muster in my, and like from the depths of my soul, you know? And it's just because I've spent my whole life, like, listening to this,
wow,
you know?
Like, a dream come true.
And I was like, I want, and, you know, I used to, like, as a kid, like on the playground at recess, I used to pretend like I was in Dragon Ball. Like, I was already, I have a light, and like, I was I think I did a con with Amanda Miller. We did this panel where we talked about like this stuff is like people say, how do you prepare? And it's like some stuff you prepare, some stuff you had a lifetime of preparation. And like this was one of those things where it was like this is what I wanted to do anime for, because I wanted to do the big yells, and I've been listening to this forever for my whole life. I know how this goes. I know how this should sound, you know. Yeah. And it was like I got to put all of those years, like all 20 plus years of being a fan into that one thing. And I think people, you know, I think that was very palpable.
Wow. Yeah. Zero,
it was
amazing.
Cool. It was so great.
Well, take that into your inspiration and take it into your heart, everybody.
Yeah.
Because dreams do come true.
They do. They really, really, like, even the ones you don't think, like, even the ones you don't think are going to happen, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Just, I always tell people when they go, oh, well, like, how do I, like, get started, or like, how do I, like, what's advice that you would give someone who's like on their journey? And it's just like, just remember that you love this. If you keep focusing on who you are as an artist, if you keep focusing on the art and being better as an artist, and that you love this stuff, it'll pay off. I promise. Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for watching Allison's Wonderland. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks, Zeno.
Thank you. Yay.
Bye.
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 Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.